And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. Glad to be with you today. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, we're going to have a very interesting program today because, well, we're going to look at the presidential election. You say, well, I'm tired of that, Tex. I've seen so many political ads recently. I've seen the three debates between the two presidential candidates and even the vice presidential between Palin and Biden. I'm just sick and tired of it all. Well, I am too. And I was trying to think of a good title for today's program, considering how just disgusted I am about the whole project. All I could come up with was this. I want to call today's program The Jousting of the Misfits. Have you seen those old programs about, you know, like King Arthur and Camelot and the Knights of the Round Table, any of the old movies? And the knight would have on his armor and he would wear a white horse and he would have a huge jousting pole or rod, and the two horsemen from across the stadium would come pounding the hoofs of the horses toward each other, and boom, the big collision, and one would go down hurt or killed. They called it jousting. And that's what we have today. It's just jousting. It's not anything that's real. It's sort of like King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table, or Robin Hood and the Sheriff of Nottingham. It's all just stupidity, isn't it? Well, unfortunately, we take one of these two men, and for the vice presidential stakes, either the woman or the man, and we put them in high office, and even though they're both stooges, either one that wins is a stooge of the Illuminati, they have a certain amount of power, and they represent a certain kind of constituency. We're going to talk about the two misfits. This is the jousting of the misfits. The two misfits who are running for high office, Barack Obama, Senator from Illinois, and John McCain, Senator from Arizona. Jousting of the misfits. Now, some people say, Tex, how dare you to call our two great national leaders, the Democrat or the Republican, to call them misfits. Oh, how cheeky of you. You know, I was recently reading John Calvin. You know, John Calvin, I didn't agree with everything that he said and did. I'm not exactly a strong Calvinist. On the other hand, I sort of am. We'll get into that some other day about Calvinism, you know, free will and all those kinds of things. But one thing that John Calvin said, I appreciate it. Here's what he said. Because people ask him, should we rebel against our national, that is our political leaders, even the kings? Should we rebel against them if they oppose God? You see, not every king, as you know it, not every potentate, not every president or chancellor is a good man. Many of them are satanic. Do terrible things, bring great disaster. Are we always obligated to support them? What about Attila the Hun? He was the leader of his nation. How about Stalin of communist Russia? Hitler, you say? Shouldn't the Germans have said Sieg Heil and gone right ahead and done what he wanted? He was their leader. He was placed there by God. But friends, what if these men rebel against God? What if they don't carry out their responsibilities before God? Here's what Calvin said. He said, earthly princes deprive themselves of all authority when they rise up against God. We ought rather to spit in their faces than to obey them. Wow. It's better to spit in their faces, said Calvin, than to obey them. After all, if they're the devil's messengers, if they're the devil's servant and you obey them, you're obeying the devil. We ought to spit in their faces rather than obey them. It was the Apostle Peter who, when the Jews who made up the high religious council of Sanhedrin brought him in, beat him. And they said, don't preach this Jesus anymore, you and your helpers, your associates. Peter answered and said, it is better to obey God than man. In other words, we've got to do what God says. You mean that God wants you to expose leaders in high places? Yes, even Paul told us that our whole mission in life is confronting wickedness in high places. There are demonic powers behind these so-called potentates and these high-fly politicians. Demon powers behind them. Should we obey these demon powers through their human agents? I pray not, dear friend. So I want to talk about these misfits and how they seem to joust so much with each other, but in the end run, they both do about the same amount of evil. Now, some say, well, John McCain is pro-life. He will save babies. Well, sounds good. He sure hasn't supported pro-life all the time. Hadn't done much for the cause. But he says he's pro-life. Barack Obama, though, we know is pro-abortion. He can say he's opposed to abortion, but he's voted for even a partial birth abortions. We know what he is. Regardless of his protestations. But you know, it could be that John McCain may kill more people by fomenting a World War III in the Middle East or somewhere else than Barack Obama allows to be killed through abortion. So which man really ultimately is the lifesaver? But on the issues that really matter, I don't see any difference in these people. Isn't it really? I go back to George Wallace, a man who, yes, at one time was a racist, but repented of it. The governor of Alabama. He said, it doesn't matter which candidate you vote for, Republican or Democrat, they're all alike. Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Not a dime's worth of difference, said the old governor of Alabama. You could dislike everything else about George Wallace, but you couldn't argue with him about that. He ran on his own party ticket, the American Independent Party, if I can remember. Got a lot of votes. In fact, they were afraid he was going to win the next time he ran, and they had him shot. He became totally incapacitated and crippled. Couldn't hardly move, paraplegic, and in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. They were afraid he was going to win. And they had a Manchurian candidate attempt to assassinate him. They did the work on him. Very, very tragic case. You would think he would end up as a bitter old man, but you know, as he went through the rest of his life, George Wallace grew softer and softer in heart. Even disabled, even so pitiful in his physical ability. He repented and apologized for his racial acts and his sins. Became a true Christian man. And you know, I believe George Wallace is going to have all his faculties, all the abilities. I don't know what form he's going to be at, but he's going to be in heaven. Because he believed in Jesus Christ. And, you know, he went from misfit to redeemed man. Better than man. Better than man. He became a new immortal through the power of Jesus Christ. And you can too. Now, I am convinced that McCain and Obama are nothing more, nothing less than Illuminati. I call them sock puppets. You ever seen what a sock puppet is? Looks like a sock, but you put your hand in it and you can manipulate with your fingers. You can make its little, you know, little mouth move up and down, and you can make its, sometimes its ears pop to and fro and make it move. Kids are just enchanted with sock puppets. You know, whatever the sock puppet, whatever you want it to do, it has to do because it's your fingers. You're manipulating it. Well, that's what they are. They're sock puppets. Now, who's inside the sock? Who's got his hand inside manipulating these people? We'll talk about that. I'm convinced they are both tools and minions of an Illuminati cabal, the elite. And that's why, friends, there is mass stupidity and great danger in trusting politicians of either political party to clean up America and set things right. Sarah Palin says, John McCain and I are reformers. Oh, sure. And Obama says, I'm going to bring the change we need. Mm-hmm. I have discovered that both of them, of these people, are under the thumb of the Zionist Illuminati. They pander to Israel and to the Jews. You'll find out, for example, that Obama has a man who is the money bag man for Israel in the U.S. Congress that tells him what to do. He has a campaign manager that tells his campaign people what to say, where to go, what will be their platform. Why should I criticize Obama? On the other side, there is McCain. His messages are piped into him. He's told what to say, he and his running mate, Sarah Palin. McCain, a longtime servant of Lord Jacob Rothschild and Nathan Rothschild of England. They've piped in millions of dollars to his campaign. He does what they say. And, of course, he has, I call him a blood brother cousin. I don't know if they're blood brothers, but they're sure soul brothers. Joseph Lieberman, the senator from Israel. Mm-hmm. Each of these candidates has journeyed to Israel this past year. Now, Israel is a little nation of some 7 million people. But it was necessary. It was expedient. It was required. It was mandatory for Senator McCain to visit there. It was a pilgrimage to his superiors. And likewise, Barack Obama had to go there. And each one, while they were in Israel, were led up like lambs, ready for slaughter, to the top of the mountain at the temple wall. And there they put on their little skull caps, the Golgotha skull caps, that are so mocking of Jesus Christ's sacrifice. You see, Jesus was sacrificed, but was resurrected by the power of God. On the place they call Golgotha, place of the skull. It was a hill. They actually call it the place of the skull. No doubt because of so many deaths having occurred there. He and two others were placed on an old wooden cross of some kind, a rugged wooden cross, their hands, their feet nailed, their ankles, whatever, you know, different theories about how the nails went in. But we know they died there. And Jesus, the Son of God, also. And the Jews wear their little skull cap, place of the skull. And so did Obama, and so, of course, did Mr. McCain. They both took a Masonic oath of loyalty to Greater Israel and to the rising Zionist world government. And only then were they deemed acceptable as potential White House residents. The misfits qualify themselves to ascend to the throne by attending the rituals of the Grand Lodge of Jerusalem, deep under the earth, under the Temple Mount, entering in at Zedekiah's cave. If you don't believe such a place exists, then you need my video, the Masonic Lodge over Jerusalem. I show you that place. I show you pictures of the very room where the Grand Lodge, the Illuminists, meet. And there, I believe they met too and carried out this Luciferian ritual. And they both vowed their faithfulness, not to America. These men, neither one of them are America firsters. They are Israel firsters, but a different Israel than we know of. An Israel that is greater Israel. An Israel that will rule the world with a Marxist-Leninist style of government and a system of gulags the world has never known, being built even as you and I share together today. Now, first of all, I want to get to Obama, because so few people know about Barack Obama. He's come up so fast. I want to tell you a little bit about it. Some things that the control media won't tell you, but I'm going to let you know about this misfit. He's handsome. He's intelligent. He's a great debater and orator. He's a Marxist-Leninist, or is he? Friends, he's whatever the Zionists tell him to be. That's what he is. He's pragmatic. He's practical. He will do whatever he's told. It's been a long time for him to get to the top, but it was worth it. Although he'll be one of the youngest men to ever enter the Oval Office if he is elected. And according to the Zionist Illuminati elite, it doesn't matter which of these men are chosen. It will fit into their scenario, and I'll explain that in a moment. Barry, or Barack, never had it too hard. Their parents were very affluent. Their mother had enough money to go to Harvard. His father was chosen by the African elite and sit there as well. And then later he ended up at Harvard Law School. Talk about a chosen one. How many black people living in the ghetto, how many young men can say, someday I will go to Harvard Law School? You say, oh, well, most of those blacks in the ghettos are just stupid people. Hey, wait just a minute. There's a lot of them that are smart, too. But they're not going to ever get to Harvard. They may actually today have more opportunity to get to Harvard than a white man. That's true. There's quotas. There's discrimination against whites, especially poverty-stricken whites, especially against lower middle-class or working-class whites. They can almost never go to an Ivy League school. How is it that Barack Obama got there? You know. I know. And before that, he went to Columbia University. Now, friends, Harvard probably cost $150,000, $250,000 a year. Where did he get the money? And Columbia cost probably $75,000 to $100,000 a year. Who paid his way? Then he got out of Harvard Law School, went back home, but home wasn't good enough. He went to Chicago. That's where all the blacks seem to have power. But they're given power by Jews. There's where he met some very, very rich Jews. And as it turns out, one of them, Rahm Emanuel, is the money bag man for Mega, the 10 richest Israeli Zionist billionaires in the world who meet once each month in a penthouse overlooking Wall Street and Broad, and they decide what's going to happen to you and me and to America and to the other 175 nations around this world every month. And they have a bag man, a money man in the U.S. Congress, and his name is Congressman Rahm Emanuel. And where does he come from? Chicago, Illinois. When Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, got up to thank her fellow House members for voting in the $700 billion bailout to the banks and Wall Street greedsters. She said, first, I'd like to thank my good friend, Congressman Rahm Emanuel. It was his knowledge of how Wall Street operates that allowed us to design and plan this bill. It was Rahm Emanuel, the Jewish Zionist connection with Israeli Mossad and with MEGA, the richest Zionist billionaires of the Illuminati in the world. It was Rahm Emanuel, even get that name. Rahm Emanuel, Emmanuel God with us. Rahm, the ram, the goat. Oh, yeah. Who is this Rahm Emanuel? It turns out that Rahm Emanuel has a very interesting history. He was the top guy, the top advisor, sort of the secret guy, always behind the scenes lurking at the White House in the Clinton administration. He told Bill Clinton what to do. It was Rahm Emanuel who planted Monica Lewinsky in the White House. And then they had something to blackmail Bill Clinton with. It was Rahm Emanuel and his associates of the Israeli Mossad that wiretapped the White House itself. And when 9/11 occurred, they had all the codes to that little briefcase that's carried around by the military officer that tells the president what to do and all that, and whether to start World War III and to let all the missiles fly. Rahm Emanuel, his family is very interesting. His father, his name is Benjamin. He was a member of the IRGUN, I-R-G-U-N, the Zionist terrorist who back in the 1930s and the 50s blew up one hotel and one restaurant after another for the Zionist cause. And many times they blamed it on Arab terrorists, but it was Israeli terrorists that did it. And Rahm Emanuel's father was one of the leaders of that group, but now he's in America. He was a Clinton advisor in that White House, and now he's the money man. In fact, he literally is the money man. Did you know that he also runs the House Committee on Campaign Contributions? Nobody in America can run for office as a U.S., a member of the U.S. House of Representatives under the Democratic Party sponsorship unless they get approval from Rahm Emanuel. Oh, you run, but you better be a millionaire, billionaire, because they won't give you any money. The party won't support you. You'll have to be an independent candidate. Rahm Emanuel meets with everyone who wants to run for Congress. And they must be a Zionist. They must be part of the network of the Illuminati elite. Or they must pledge their allegiance to Israel. Rahm Emanuel makes sure of that. By the way, Rahm Emanuel's brother is a Hollywood agent. He does the movies for Michael Moore. The documentaries. Oh, yes. Yes. You thought Michael Moore was independent. No, Michael Moore is Jewish. Michael Moore is a Jew, and he works for Rahm Emanuel's brother, who is a slick Hollywood agent. He tells Hollywood what to do. He tells Michael Moore what movies to make. Well, thank God he's not the agent, this Emanuel guy, for Christians like Mel Gibson, right? No, you're wrong. He, in fact, is Mel Gibson's agent in Hollywood. More on that at a later time. Now, Colin Powell, General Colin Powell, Secretary of State Colin Powell, says that Obama is going to be a transformational president. He said that on Tom Brokaw's Meet the Press this weekend. A transformational president. So there's going to be a transformation. The change he promises is going to be real. And Madeleine Albright, whose real name, by the way, is not Madeleine, but Magda, whose last name is really not Albright, but Carbell, whose father was a Polish communist Jew. Oh, yeah. Magda Carbell, a.k.a. or also known as Madeleine Albright, Secretary of State in the Clinton administration, Jewish Zionist, says a real powerful event is going to take place within 6 months after Obama's elected. Oh, there's going to be evidently something bigger than 9/11. Something that will transform America and the world. Of course, Obama began his money campaign. They say he began his campaign actually in the home of this guy Ayers, this 1960s terrorist bomber. But where the campaign really began was in a place called Atherton, California, at the Getty Mansion and Estate. Now, by the way, you can get a picture of this and even of the people milling outside the Getty Estate waiting for Barack Obama to be there. This was before he won the nomination. This was before most Americans even knew who he was. He went to the Getty Estate on what they call Billionaire's Row in Atherton, California, out of Los Angeles. And all of these Zionist billionaires, led by George Soros, a Hungarian Jew, a currency manipulator, who's a big pal of the Rothschilds over in Great Britain and France, and Soros was there while Obama spoke in the living room at the Getty Mansion. Who was J. Paul Getty? Well, find out for yourself. Owner of Getty Oil Company. Pagan goddess worshiper. That's where they anointed the mighty Obama. And then he went to Austin, Texas, to Westlake Hills, to the most ritzy area there, and Tarrytown, another ritzy area in Austin, Texas, and all the high-tech Jewish billionaires met and came together and gave him huge campaign contributions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars going into his campaign, all made possible in the first place, though, by Rahm Emanuel, Chicago dealmaker, mega man, congressional money boy. Now, they've chosen Obama. By the way, the Pritzker family, another billionaire family, Jewish, out of Chicago, or another one of his big backers. So he's got all these people behind him, the Jews. And you know, just to make sure he did the right thing and said the right thing, they needed a handler for him. They found one in a man named David Axelrod. David Axelrod has been involved in Democratic Party activist politics for over 30 years, a Jewish dealmaker, another Jewish dealmaker. And they chose Axelrod and they told Obama, here is your boss. He'll tell you what to do. He's the guy that speaks to the press. He's the guy that tells Obama where to go, what to say. David Axelrod, a Jew. Obama is given money by Soros, by Rahm Emanuel and his friends, but he's managed on a daily basis meticulously by David Axelrod, a Jew. Haven't you noticed all the Jews around him in all his campaigns? He doesn't have Al Sharpton. He doesn't have Jesse Jackson. He doesn't have the NAACP. He's got the Jews. He's got the Zionists. Now, when we come back in a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit more about Obama, and then we're going to introduce John McCain, Rothschild puppet, Zionist, warmonger. Is there a dime's worth of difference? Even a nickel? Even a penny? Even a farthing? Well, maybe a shekel. And I'm Tex Mars. I'll be right back after this brief message. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Tex Mars again here. You know, I've just put out two fantastic videos. Boy, I'm proud of these videos. You know why I'm proud? Because they're truthful. And they're amazing videos. Now, they link somewhat to my book, Mysterious Monuments, Encyclopedia of Secret Illuminati Designs, Masonic Architecture and Occult Places. And by the way, that's available for your gift of $39. That includes shipping and handling. But these two videos, the first one is entitled, Where the Rich and Famous Dwell. We were talking about George Soros. There's also the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the Astors, the DuPonts, the Gettys, and other storied bloodlines of the Illuminati, dynasties of the elite. Where the Rich and Famous Dwell. You'll find out. We're going to take you. We're going to let you peek inside the gates. Not many people get to go there, but you're going to get to visit inside those places. And you'll see the most amazing, horrible things. Oh, there's richness, there's opulence, there's magnificent tapestries and furnishings and carpeting and all that. But what about those gargoyles? What about those devils in stone? What about those pagan goddesses and god statues? What about, oh my goodness, I'm not even going to tell you everything you'll see. The vulgarity, the satanic worship of these people, it's disgusting. And everywhere, money, money, money is indicated. Cornelius Vanderbilt was once quoted as saying, I have been insane on the subject of money making all my life. Insane. One news reporter who visited the Hearst Mansion on top of that hill in San Simeon, California, he wrote a column for the European Today newspaper, and he said what he found at the Hearst Mansion was insane abundance. Insane. Insanity. Vanderbilt, I've been insane on the subject of money making all my life. Where the rich and famous dwell, inside the estates, inside the luxury villas of the rich, you'll see all of the architectural secrets, and you'll know what kind of men and women these are. They're fabulous parties. They're debutante extravaganzas, and they're devil rituals with black candles, red drapes, and more. Where the Rich and Famous Dwell, 60 minutes in length, please specify either DVD or VHS format. That's right, we still have the old VHS for those of you who would like to have it. But if not, if you don't order the VHS, that's Victory House Sam, VHS video, we'll send you the DVD. So make sure you specify if you want the VHS or the DVD to make sure we get it right. Now, $25, and we'll send this right out to you. We have hundreds that we've just made up, manufactured, and they're all in a nice shrink wrap and a beautiful artistic cover. Sandra Myers, who works with us here, she does all our artwork. She's the art director. Fabulous job that she does. And I think you'll be impressed, but most of all with the content, what you find out. Now, $25, please add $4 shipping and handling. A total of $29. Ask for the video documentary, the video or the film, Where the Rich and Famous Dwell. We have another video, too, called Architectural Colossus. And it is also $25 with $4 shipping and handling, $29. You know, mystical architecture is the chief weapon in the Illuminati's armory for the seduction of humanity. And here you'll discover all of the amazing new monuments, buildings, and statues that are rising. And the Illuminati elite believe that they are imbued with occult power, spiritual energy. And this architecture is designed to promote a mysterious grand design calculated to end in the domination of planet Earth by an elite cadre of superior illumined beings. Who is behind this architectural colossus? And what strange Luciferian force compels its visionary builders and architects to complete what they call the great work of the Illuminati? Now, either one of these 60-minute videos, Both of them, either one is available in DVD or VHS, is $25 plus $4 shipping and handling. You can call us toll free to get either one, either Where the Rich and Famous Dwell or Architectural Colossus, for $25 plus $4 shipping and handling, $29 for each of the videos. Call us toll free, 1-800-234-9673, or go to powerofprophecy.com. powerofprophecy.com. Now, you can write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733 in the United States of America. And again, $29 postpaid, shipping everything, for either Where the Rich and Famous Dwell or Architectural Colossus. Specify VHS or DVD. If you haven't got my 600 and some odd page book, Mysterious Monuments, $39 postpaid, 875 incredible photos, eye-opening, eye-popping, some people would say, order that Mysterious Monuments, the book. We'll send it out to you as well for $39. Now let's return to my regular program. Maybe it's your regular program. I'm here to serve you. And I want to thank all of you, by the way, those of you who each year give to the Children's Home of Texas, the Texas Children's Home, run by Christians. And boy, they're doing a great work. Many of you, I know, are giving to that cause. If you do want to give a love gift or donation to the Texas Children's Home through Power of Prophecy, just make it out, make your checks out to Power of Prophecy, or your money orders or your cash, and leave a little note and say, text, this is for the orphanage. This is for the children's home. And I want to make a guarantee. And every person that works at this ministry knows that I tell the truth about this. And there's no doubt about it. I don't even see one penny here. Not one cent. Every nickel you give to the Texas Children's Home goes to the Texas Children's Home. We don't take any out for salaries, overhead. There is no overhead. They will get every cent, and we personally bring it to them. We personally bring it to them. We don't allow any intermediary. This isn't some place off in the Bahamas or some nonsense. This is real, folks. You're making a difference, bringing these young men and women, helping them to have a place in this world. And this is something that will live forever. If you want to give to that cause, just write to us and send us a love gift or a donation. Or you can call and use your charge card. But make sure you specify now, this is for the kids. This is for the children's home. This is for the orphanage. We'll know what you're talking. Everybody here is trained on this. They work here and they give too. Every year, our employees, our staff, we don't force them to. We don't make them. They want to. And Wanda and I give every year too. And we give often during the year to this great cause. By the way, this was Wanda, my precious wife. This was her idea. This is what she wanted to do. And I'm for it 100%. And until the day I die, I'm going to give help to this children's home. And it's worthwhile. And it means something. It'll mean something to your heart to give to this cause. So every year we have this fundraiser. If you're a little late, we say, I don't have any money. Maybe next month I'll have some. Give it. Give it. We'll get it to them. It doesn't have to be right during this little fundraising time, but it would be good. The more we can give, the better. But that's okay. When you can give, give. Just make sure it's designated. And what we do is, yeah, it goes in our general fund, but then we keep track of all the money that comes in for this. We keep it separately. In fact, that's Sandra's job. If I can remember, Sandra, you still have that job, right? She does that and takes care of all of it. And we don't even see it. You know, the staff here, except Sandra, she's the gal, and she and her lovely husband, they take care of these things, and we thank them for the great efforts. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Obama, and then let's move on to McCain. First of all, you need to know something about Obama. I want to ask you this question, friend. When he got out of Harvard Law School, he went back to Chicago. And he worked, evidently, he says, as a community organizer for $12,000 a year. And it's interesting that in 2005, Obama, who was nothing but a little old community organizer, that means sort of a rabble rouser, sort of a Marxist agitator. That's what they really do in the ghettos. But in any case, he did so well making $12,000 a year that by 2005, he purchased a new home in the ritzy, luxurious Kenwood District of Chicago for $1.65 million. I want that $12,000 a year job. How about you folks? $12,000 a year and you end up in a home worth almost $2 million in a ritzy, rich man's area of Chicago. What a deal. By the way, not only does he have a lot of Jewish friends, but there's the gays. Oh, yeah, they surround him. A lot of people have criticized him for the things that his pastor of over 20 years, Jeremiah Wright, said about America. That didn't bother me as so much about what he said, what his pastor, Jeremiah Wright, said about the gays. He's for them. He's for the gay agenda. That whole church there is pro-gay. You say, well, Barack Obama probably didn't know it. He didn't know they were pro-gay. Really? How about this? On Obama's own presidential campaign site is an open letter from Barack Obama to the lesbian gay community. He wrote a letter to them. Would you like to know what he said? He starts off this way. He says, I'm running for president to build an America that lives up to our founding promise of equality for all, a promise that extends to our gay brothers and sisters. Wow. I ask for your support in this election so that together we can bring about real change for all lesbian gay Americans, including the gender people. You know, the transgender people? Oh, yeah. He's for transgender. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. This is addressed to the LGBT community. You know, the transvestites, the guys that dress like women. Oh, boy. This is a moral imperative. Why? That's what he does as a Christian, he's saying. This is a moral imperative. That's why, says Barack, throughout my career, I have fought to eliminate discrimination against LGBT Americans. In Illinois, I co-sponsored a fully inclusive bill that prohibited discrimination on the basis of both sexual orientation and gender identity, extending protection to the workplace, housing, and places of public accommodation. In the U.S. Senate, says Obama, I have co-sponsored bills that would equalize tax treatment for same-sex couples. It goes on and on and on. I am going to pursue equality for gay and lesbian couples, whether that means a domestic partnership, a civil union, or a civil marriage. I support the complete repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, a position I have held since before arriving in the U.S. Senate. And now, this is from the Washington Blade, a gay newspaper. Obama pastor backs gay rights. Reverend Jeremiah Wright supported gay ministry. Oh, yeah. As they say in the gay community, the Messiah has come. Now let's get to John McCain. What about John McCain? He's a moral man. He goes to a Baptist church. He didn't go there for very long. But when he realized he was going to run for president again, he went down and joined the Southern Baptist Church. That's why he's such a Christian man. But wait. There's that deal about abandoning his wife after a big fling with Cindy McCain. How did they meet? They met at a cocktail party. While they were drinking, they had their eyes on each other, according to his biographers. And it ended up that very night with them in a hotel suite. He and Cindy McCain, she was a rich man's daughter, a former cheerleader. A beautiful girl, and he was a philandering, no-good, casino-gambling drunkard who wanted to rise up the ladder. He needed money to be a U.S. senator, and there was Cindy McCain. Her father was one of the big beer distributors. Cindy McCain's father actually was an ex-con who had been thrown in prison for racketeering, got out, and the mob gave him a big beer distributorship. There was young Cindy. Compare that to McCain's older wife. Hey, throw her over. Go with Cindy. Friends, Republicans are Christians. Evangelicals, aren't they? Oh, yeah. That's why one of the top Republican evangelicals, Glenn Foley of Florida, messed around with the little page boys. Pedophiles. That's why Senator Craig has a wide stance in men's restrooms and sticks his hand trying to link up with a queer in the other stall. Because these Republicans are so pristine pure. Like John McCain. Yeah, at a cocktail party in the spring of 1979. And this was in Newsweek magazine. But they didn't make a big deal of it. Doesn't matter anymore. It's no big deal to philander, to cheat on your wife. At least he finally married Cindy McCain. Now, her conscience must have bothered her. Something bothered her a little bit. Because Cindy McCain, throughout most of her marriage, she's been a drug addict. She started a charity organization, a medical organization, mostly so she could get her hands on drugs, which she used illegally. And when they caught her and confronted her and said, somebody's been stealing the drugs and taking them. It's you, isn't it, Cindy? She was the boss there, giving all this money to him so she could get her hands on the drugs. She confessed and she went to drug rehab. That way she didn't go to prison. Oh, boy. Well, she said, I just had back pain and emotional stress. So I started taking Percocet and Vicodin and blah, 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 blah. She's rehabilitated. Sure she is. Now, John McCain, he's still in his old ways. He visits Las Vegas and all the casinos. He and his big buddy, Bill Bennett. Bill Bennett, of course, he wrote the Book of Morals for the Christian community. He was on the James Dobson Show. Well, he's on CNN Network as a paid contributor of the Republican Party. Bill Bennett. Well, he was in the first Bush administration, the Reagan. Oh, yeah, Bill Bennett. He was the drug czar. But he lost $4 million in Las Vegas. And then there's that muscular female prostitute dominatrix who he called on regularly. And John McCain goes there, too. I wonder if Cindy knows. You know, there was this movie out this last year or so called Wedding Crashers. It was all about how these two guys loved to crash weddings, and they would end up bedding all these women, having sex with, you know, women they weren't married to. They'd get drunk, and they'd take them all up and have sex with them. I guess that was the whole theme of the movie, from what I read. And, you know, it's interesting. They needed a politician for a bit part. Guess who volunteered? John McCain. John McCain, he made a cameo appearance in Wedding Crashers, the sex comedy. In fact, the Drudge Report, it's a Republican newsletter on the web, call it a boob raunch fest. A boob meaning breast, woman's breast, raunch meaning raunchy or decadent, festival. John McCain was on the NBC's Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and Jay Leno asked him about it. What about the fact that you appeared in this movie, Wedding Crashers? All these women showing all their boobs and everything. Well, said John McCain, laughing, ha-ha, I work with boobs every day. I work with boobs every day. Well, there's one that he's very close friends with. His name is Lieberman. He ran for vice president on the Democratic ticket, but he's now the chief supporter of McCain. How can a liberal Democrat, the senator from Israel, oh, he's not from Israel, he's from New England somewhere. Oh, I know that. But he doesn't care about New England. He doesn't care about his home state. What is it, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Maine? It doesn't matter. He's not from there. He's from Tel Aviv. Joe Lieberman. Now, this is an interesting fact. How did Sarah Palin get to be the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party? It's because John McCain met her for a couple hours at a governor's conference and was so impressed. Oh, yeah? Shut up. That's not the way it happened. Let me explain. It doesn't take much research. I discovered that it was the Zionist Jews, including the chief rabbi of Alaska, who gave her the money that she needed to run for office. They made her a star in Alaska. And then, everybody in Israel, all the movers and shakers, found out about her. Oh, how did they do this? Well, check out Israel National Radio's website. You'll find there that shortly after she became governor of Alaska, this misfit, Sarah Palin, and you know she's pretty. She's smart. She's ambitious. I'm not saying she's all bad. She says she's an evangelical Christian. She says, I love Israel. Oh, goody, goody. She said, and I want to quote her, this is Sarah Palin speaking, I only have one flag in my office as governor of Alaska. The flag of, well, where do you think? Fill in the blank. The flag of what? What's the flag she has in her office? Is it the flag of Romania or Bulgaria or Russia or the United States? Well, you already know the answer. It's the flag of Israel. Now, on the Tamar Yonah show, which interviews all the movers and shakers in Israel, including all the prime ministers and the members of the Knesset, their parliament and all that stuff, and even presidents and prime ministers of other nations when they come to visit Israel. I'm sure they interviewed Barack Obama and John McCain when he visited. Israel National Radio, this is the public radio network of Israel. They did a two-hour special program right after Sarah Palin was not nominated vice president, but when she was made governor of Alaska. How did they know about her? They said she's a Zionist. She's pro-Israel. She's an evangelical Christian that understands what we need, what we must have. 2 hours they plugged her to all of the movers and shakers. How would you like to have a 2-hour ad on a national radio? The Tamar Yonah Show that bills itself as interviewing all the movers and shakers. Now, there are 50 governors, one for each state in the United States. And that doesn't count the Virgin Islands and, you know, Puerto Rico and all these territories of the U.S. And every governor has to be pro-Israel and a Zionist. At least they have to pander to Israel or they won't get elected. She's only one of 50. How is it that Israel made her a star in the country of Israel? All the Jews knew about her before the Americans did. Because the Zionist billionaires had their eye on her. They had their scouting reports. I mean, you know, it's sort of like the NFL football draft. They go out and they check you out and they try you out and they audition you. And then they watch you and monitor you. And even after you're involved in the height of the campaign, in the fury of the dogfight, they watch you then too and tell you what to say. She has a handler, a Jewish handler, right now today. And guess what? When she was preparing her speech in her hotel suite, preparing the next day for her big speech where she was so successful. You know the one where she talked about the lipstick on the pig and all that stuff? Yeah, well, she was holed up in her hotel suite, working on that speech and working on it. Oh, what a grand production it would be. And Bev LaHaye of Concerned Women for America wanted to go see her. Phyllis Schlafly, The pro-life activist, wanted to get in to see her for just a few minutes. Her handler said, we have no time for you. But there was a group that got in. There was a little delegation of three people. Let me tell you their names. It was Senator Lieberman and the two top officials of AIPAC, the most powerful Jewish lobby group in the world. Those three. And they spent 2.5 hours privately with Ms. Palin, Governor Palin, in her hotel suite. How did they gain entrance? What did they have to say to her? Did they conduct a ritual? I don't know. But when they came out, the Washington Post and the New York Times and a few other news outfits were there. They'd been called and told, be there. And there in the lobby of the hotel, they had set up a little room. And Lieberman came out smiling. Joseph Lieberman, senator from Israel, McCain's pal. Democrat, liberal, socialist. And he said, Sarah Palin is pro-Israel all the way. We believe in her. That was it. That was the message. And, of course, the Washington Post and New York Times are owned by Jews. This is the message for all of the media. Now, I know a few liberals have bashed her. I know Saturday Night Live, Tina Fey, they made fun of her and a few of those things. Hey, they do that. Some knock the Republicans, some knock the Democrats, and mostly the media are liberals. But when it gets down to the bottom line, they're friends of Israel, the media. They do what they're told. Fox is a Zionist network. CNN is a Zionist network. Bill O'Reilly is the big poobah of Fox News Network. Guess where he went last year? To Los Angeles? And spoke before the Jewish ADL. And he was warmly received. Because he's a big Zionist promoter. But wait, Wolf Blitzer is paid by a Jewish lobbying group. He's paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. And yet he's right there, Wolf Blitzer, giving us all the election, pre-election coverage on CNN. Of course, Fox Network promotes McCain and Palin. And CNN promotes Obama and Biden. Not a dime's worth of difference. They call themselves, I'm liberal, I'm conservative. I'm Republican, I'm Democrat. Oh, come on, get serious. You're pro-Zionist and that's all you are. And you're going to rob and steal from America and create a Zionist New World Order, ZOG, and America has become the Zionist occupational government. ZOG. Now, that's the truth. Now, can I tie in John McCain to the Rothschilds the way I've tied in Obama? Of course. Because I have all the news clippings from the London newspapers, The Guardian, The Independent, and so forth, that tell us that in this very year, after John McCain left Israel, he jetted right over to London, England, where they had a big campaign banquet for him. Who was there? Lord Jacob Rothschild. Nathaniel Rothschild, his son. And his lusciously lovely wife. And they garnered millions of campaign contributions for their little boy, John McCain. Their little military man, John McCain. Now, how is it that Rothschild and Soros give money to Obama, but the two richest Rothschilds in the world throw a big campaign gala and give millions, they and their Jewish friends, to McCain? Well, George Wallace said it. Not a dime's worth of difference. You know, they even have their own secret societies they go to. Over on the East Coast, they have a big Renaissance Day. That's where Bill Clinton and all the boys, John Kerry and all of them go. Then over on the West Coast, they have the Bohemian Grove homos. And they all go there, John McCain and all of them. It's all the same. Not a dime's worth of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. They're not going to reform anything. That's why both Obama and McCain voted for the $700 billion gift, robbery, bribe, for the big banks, for Wall Street. Folks, more and more people are waking up to this. And God bless the listeners of Power of Prophecy for knowing, for understanding the truth. And I thank God. Daniel 12, verse 10 says something amazing. It says, in the last days the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. How can you be wise? Believe the truth. Believe in Christ Jesus. Don't perish because of ignorance. You can know. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. And my prayer, my hope, is that you'll tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.